I'm Leonard Lopate. This is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. Today for our underreported segment, the invasion of the cane toads in Australia. You may already be familiar with the story of these transplanted pests through the documentary that was made in 1987 that has become a cult classic called Cane Toads, An Unnatural History. It tracked their spread throughout Queensland. Well, now they're back in the news because they appear to be headed northwest to Darwin. And joining me now to explain why ecologists are very concerned about the cane toads are Keith Salfeld, Wildlife Management Officer with Parks and Wildlife in Australia, and David Bowman, Director of the Key Center for Tropical Wildlife Management in Darwin. Good day, or should I say good morning.
How are you going?
It's 2 a.m. right now in Australia?
It's early in the morning, yeah.
You're not exactly sure when. When were cane toads first introduced into Australia, and why were they brought in?
This is an example of the law of unexpected consequences. They were brought to Australia in 1935 in the vain hope of controlling a beetle in sugarcane crops. But the toads actually didn't do that job. They just went berserk.
And because they were not indigenous to Australia, they started reproducing like mad. How do they look? Are they big?
They're very big.
One at a time.
Go ahead, David.
Go ahead, David.
Oh, yeah, they're a very large toad, disgusting for at least our aesthetic, a disgusting animal from another hemisphere.
Where are they from?
Warts. They're from Central America.
Uh-huh. And so they're large and they're homely as far as you're concerned. And they
actually are like all vermin. They actually get along really well with human beings. And they like what human beings do to the environment, disturbing it, leaving garbage everywhere. They're a trash animal, really.
I understand that only 101 toads were imported in 1935, but within 6 months, they had boomed to 60,000 toads. So this means they must reproduce even quicker than rabbits.
They're very quick reproducers. A single female toad probably spawns anywhere between 8,000 and 35,000 eggs at a single session.
Wow. Do we have any idea of how many there are now in Australia?
We don't have any accurate information on how many there are, but it's in the millions.
Keith, is that kind of reproduction unusual for toads in general?
It's not unusual for toads in general, but in Australia, most of our amphibian species, the frogs, only produce hundreds to a few thousand eggs at a spawning. So the toads basically are producing 10 times as many eggs every time they spawn.
Is Eastern Australia a particularly good place for them to live?
They are very adaptable and can survive in fairly broad habitat range and quite broad environmental conditions.
Because this is nothing like Central America.
No, that's not correct. Actually, Darwin, the monsoon tropics, is actually not a bad facsimile of Central America.
Is that why they're moving there, David?
What's that?
Do you think that's the reason they're moving there? After all these years, they sense that there's a homeland for them?
Yeah, no, they are very happy in Queensland. They like the climate. There's plenty of water. But they've got an added advantage, and that's that they've got no competitors. In Central America, the things which evolved with them keep them in check. Okay, they got these poison glands, but the animals know, the predators know how to process these animals, so they've got immunity to the toxins. But in Australia, we're an island continent, and what we've done is it's like in an evolutionary instant, we've plonked a totally different, like an alien organism, totally different organism into an environment, and they are just diabolical because they're poisonous. Any predator who has a go at them gets killed.
They're not poisonous to humans, are they?
Oh, God, yes.
I thought that they were just kind of psychedelic, that people were actually licking them, if I remember the film that I saw some years back, licking them to get high.
Yeah, if you've got a weak heart, you can die, though.
Yeah, they're very toxic. Bufotoxin is extremely poisonous, and you just need to take the example of the impact they have on any of our native wildlife that actually attacks the toad to try and eat it. Most of them die within minutes.
So are they wiping out whole species?
Well, that's the big question, isn't it? There's a lot of things going on in northern Australia, and attributing the decline of native species to a single factor is enormously complex because there have been so many other changes, particularly associated with the transition from Aboriginal land management to settler Australians who've used the land very differently. They've introduced stock. They've changed the way the landscape gets burnt. So there's lots of things going on, but there's evidence in terms of wiping out. There is going to be this is like a tectonic shift in the sense of the whole of the biology of Australia. This is just another factor where we're seeing the biology of Australia becoming globalised in a sense. And the thing which people have got to remember is, well, why are there different animals on different continents? And that's because they've been isolated through millions and millions of years. And what we're doing, because of jet travel and because of our capacity to shift things around at will, is that the cane toads are a beautiful example of this, we're in the process of homogenizing the biology of our planet.
But I would imagine that the Aborigines, who are very ecologically savvy, were upset from the start by the import of these cane toads. Did anybody listen to them?
Well, that's complicated, actually. Aboriginal people who live on their country can be very pragmatic, too, that they've adopted some of the feral animals they've incorporated now into their religions, like the water buffaloes, which got released from British settlements, horses, they see them as part of the giant sort of creation myth. And with the cane toads, I've heard stories that some of them actually quite like having them around their house because they keep bugs and things down.
They feed off of bugs when they're not killing off animals. Haven't changes occurred? Aren't there some snakes that have adjusted to the cane toads and now are feeding on them?
There is one snake, the keelback, that can feed on cane toads. But there's recent evidence that they've survived for a long time eating cane toads because they're only eating the smaller toads. And some recent information suggests that if they actually attack the larger toads, that they'll kill them too. But there are a number of animals that have actually adapted and learnt to feed on cane toads without being poisoned.
On the other hand, there are some that are endangered. I understand the quoll is in serious danger, and people are talking about actually taking them out of Australia for a while and putting them on some isolated islands so that they won't go extinct. Is that true?
There's a program that we've got running up here in the Northern Territory where we've translocated a population of quolls that originated from Kakadu National Park and from the Darwin region to two of the offshore islands. That population is doing very well. And the reason for actually initiating that translocation was there was evidence from Kakadu that the presence of the cane toads was causing a dramatic decline in quoll numbers to the point where it's not certain, but it's likely that there would be local extinction of the quolls.
Now, what is a quoll? David?
A quoll is actually the nearest thing we've got to a thylacine, the Tasmanian tiger.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lineage in our marsupials, you know, the pouch animals which have got pouches, which are carnivorous. And, you know, everybody's heard of the Tasmanian devil and the Tasmanian tiger. Well, there are these little cat-like animals, which are called quolls. They're called native cats. And they're pesky little things. And they're like all predators. They like to have a go at whatever they get down their throat. And so cane toads turn up and they go, geez, I'll have one of them. And they have a go at them, and of course they get a terrible surprise because they didn't know about the poison which exudes from behind the head of the toad. And as Keith was saying, you know, they'll be dead within minutes.
Now, have the cane toads generally just stayed in Queensland until now? Or have they been spreading?
No, the toads have been... It's actually a very unusual story in a way that people are getting so interested in cane toads right now. And the reason is because this wet season, right now it's raining up in the north, the toads are moving into the largest northern Australian city, or the only northern Australian city really. They're moving in. There's an invasion happening as we speak.
In the city itself?
Of Darwin, yeah. They're sort of on the outskirts and they're going to be moving in and they're going to radically impact the quality of our life. But for the last 20 years, these toads have been spreading throughout the north of Australia in their march from the east coast right across thousands of kilometres. They've been impacting, and it sort of wasn't, nobody was really interested because it was, you know, in the outback and who cares, you know, it's in the Gulf of Carpentaria, you know, who goes there? But now they're coming to Darwin, we're getting international attention, but this problem has been around for 20 or 30 years. We knew it was going to happen. People were predicting pretty well the date it was going to happen. They weren't far off.
Has anybody been doing research during all of that time to find a way to stem the tide of cane toads? Don't answer right now. We'll come back. We'll take a little break here. My guests are David Bowman, who's director of the Key Center for Tropical Wildlife Management in Darwin, a city that is now being invaded by cane toads, and Keith Saalfeld, Wildlife Management Officer with Parks and Wildlife in Australia. This is Underreported on The Leonard Lopate Show. Stay with us. I'm Leonard Lopate. This is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. And today on Underreported, we're talking about the cane toad invasion of Australia with Keith Saalfeld, Wildlife Management Officer with Parks and Wildlife in Australia, and David Bowman, Director of the Key Center for Tropical Wildlife Management in Darwin, a city that is now slowly being invaded by the cane toads. So people have been aware of the cane toad problem for a while, Keith. Why has so little serious scientific research been done until now?
There's been serious scientific research over many years, and it's pretty much identified that the realistic mechanism to control cane toads will actually be a biological control. And the CSIRO in Australia, Commonwealth Organisation, is actually working at developing a control mechanism, a biological control. But, of course, they have to make certain they get it absolutely right.
Now, that biological control would identify cane toad genes that control the development of tadpoles and then work to counteract the development?
That's exactly right. That's what they're looking for, and they've identified the gene involved in the metamorphosis from the tadpole to the toadlet, and they're now looking at developing a blocking agent for that, and then they'll have to come up with a mechanism to get that into the toad population. The big worry is they've got to make sure they get the right delivery mechanism that's specific to toads and toads only. The chance of it spreading into the general frog population would be disastrous and make the toad invasion look insignificant in comparison.
How you don't want to get rid of all of the frogs in Australia, only cut back on the number of cane toads. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, there's a problem with biological controls, apart from the fact that the cane toad's an example of a biological control which went wrong, and that is if any of these agents were to get into Southeast Asia or into the Americas, then you would obliterate the other toads, which, you know, would have the same mechanisms because they're more closely related. So we are playing with evolutionary fire here. This is a, you know, very serious issue, and I think it underlines, the whole toad story underlines the fact of the lack of control humans have over nature. We often see ourselves as being sort of this incredibly controlling, and we are quite destructive of nature. But the invasion of the cane toads really is a terrible reminder of how powerless we are when we're up against, you know, an organism which is, you know, was playing hardball. This is a serious organism. This is evolution in action.
Actually, this is at a time when the frog population of the world seems to be decreasing at an alarming rate. So the cane toads are perhaps better equipped to withstand whatever is going wrong.
Well, that's correct. And there's a big shakeout happening in our planet at the moment. We're in the middle of a huge extinction crisis and a homogenization of the flora and fauna of all the continents. And what we're sifting through are the real tough guys who are able to withstand the shocks us humans are able to unleash on the environment. And the toad, as I said before, you know, is a vermin. It likes what humans do. It likes the rubbish. It likes the chaos, the, you know, the disturbed areas, the ponds, the filth. And so they're like a rat, you know, they're doing really well. And that they've got this added advantage of being toxic. But some of the more, you know, gentle, you know, they're sort of, I guess you could sort of see them as having been in an evolutionary backwater. The Australian biota has never really had to compete on a global scale. And what we're doing is shipping in more and more animals from all over the world into Australia. And this is globalization in action. It's biological globalization, not economic globalization. And there are a lot of losers here.
Now, this is not unique to Australia. In the American South, we have a fish that seems to be killing off all the other fish. We also have some fungus, I guess, a tree fungus that is killing off a lot of the trees in the South. This is something that we have done to ourselves, as you say, through globalization?
Correct. And, in fact, in in Florida, you've got some Australian plants. You've got the Melaleuca trees, which are taking over the Everglades. So, yeah, I mean, Australia gets to land a few punches too.
But, revenge.
You know, the whole problem is that you are playing with evolutionary scales here. This is the thing most everyday people do not understand. When you're playing with moving things across which have been isolated for millions and millions of years, and there are huge consequences. There are lots of casualties, and there are some unexpected winners. So we're going to be in a paradox that at any particular point on Earth, we're going to have this extraordinary sort of multiculturalism, all these things from all over the place, but it'll be homogeneous around the world. You'll find when you travel the same weeds, the same birds, the same animals, you'll be eating basically the same meat. That's what we're doing. We're creating a globalized flora and fauna.
In the documentary from 1987, which is a long time ago, and cane toads were already a problem, one of the ways some people were dealing with them was just to try to drive over as many as they could when they were driving down a road with a lot of cane toads on it. Has that been the typical response? Do all Australians hate these cane toads?
Well, there are a few oddities, as I said. You know, some people actually can see good in them. Some of the Aboriginal people I know, their modus operandi is to set fire to the vegetation and incinerate them in situ. You know, but this again, it's a philosophical thing. Why do we suddenly have license to be so cruel to some animals just because we decide they're despicable? I mean, I think the cane toad's an example of just so many philosophical issues about human relationships with nature and with animals. You know, just because we think they're ugly and disgusting, it's fair enough to go and get a golf club and whack them to pieces.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, is that really moral?
Especially since the cane toads didn't ask to be moved to Australia.
Absolutely not.
I understand there's a contest that's been set up to find the best cane toad trap. Have there been lots of submissions?
We've had quite a few submissions and interest in the competition from all over Australia. And the idea behind the competition was to actually tap into that great wealth of knowledge that existed in the general public with people who have been living with cane toads and dealing with cane toads for many years now, and see if there's some inventive ideas out there that actually haven't been considered.
I read an article that suggested that the most humane way to kill them is to put a cane toad in a plastic bag and then freeze it. That doesn't sound humane to me.
It has been identified as the most humane way that we know of at the moment. Basically, put the cane toad in a plastic bag, put it in the fridge. It pushes it into a state of deep sleep similar to estivation, where they basically hibernate, and then put them into the freezer and they just drop to the next level, and that results in death.
And what would you like to see? Would you like to see them all killed off, or do you think that you could ever arrive at a point where they're kept in under relative control?
I don't think we'll ever have a point where they're all killed off. What we hopefully will reach is a balance where the cane toad ends up becoming a naturalized part of the Australian ecosystem.
And would there be a negative fallout if you killed them all off? By now, they've been so much a part of Australia since 1935, they are Australian by now, aren't they?
Yeah, I'll give you a classic example of this. Just a couple of years ago, a virus was released accidentally, which was being developed to control rabbits. And there were a whole lot of knock-on effects which happened when the wild rabbits, which were introduced to Australia, were unexpectedly wiped out from areas. A lot of predators which had been dependent on the rabbits, native animals, suddenly had to switch. Aboriginal people who developed, using them as a food source suddenly lost the food source. So I think it's the other aspect of cane toads is the law of unexpected consequences, that any rapid manoeuvre, introducing animals or suddenly obliterating them, will have unexpected consequences, and we've got to be incredibly mindful of that. We're dealing with hugely complex systems which we don't completely understand, and it's very humbling to realise that here's a city which is being invaded by an organism, and basically the biologists have been standing around describing it, but they actually can't control it.
Thomas Keneally once told me that one of the big differences between the American story and the Australian story is that our pioneers went across the country into the deserts and eventually came out into California. In Australia, the people went into the interior and never came out. How does that apply to the cane toads? Can they survive in that really difficult interior of Australia?
No, they can't survive in the central arid country. They do need permanent water supply. Like all amphibians, if they're too long away from water, they dehydrate and die. But they will spread over a significant portion of Australia, certainly around into Western Australia and down the West Australian coastline. And the predictions are that they'll go a considerable distance down the East Australian seaboard, quite a bit further than they've already reached, possibly as far as Sydney.
Is this a big story in Australia? Does everybody in Australia know about the cane toad problem?
Yeah, everybody knows about it, but it's like being boiled slowly, you know, that we've had plenty of time to adjust to it. I guess the impact, the direct impact on Darwin is going to be a bigger story, but it's generally the international media are more fascinated by the invasion of a city. I think Australians are sort of a bit blasé about it. And what we're really wanting to sort of discover is how disgusting the impact is going to be. How many, dead toads are we going to wake up to every morning in our swimming pools, and how many dogs are going to die, and are the streets going to be, littered with splattered toads all over the place? Because, you see, Darwin is a very, very favourable habitat for toads, far more favourable than any of the other urban areas they've got to, because there are some quite massive floodplains surrounding Darwin. So if it's magical surrealism and there's just toad goo everywhere, I guess that'll become a huge story in Australia. But, at the moment it's just sort of like, the toads are invading the territory, but weird things always happen in the territory.
On the other hand, when people start losing their dogs and cats, their beloved pets, they may feel a little differently.
Oh, yeah. The locals in Darwin are horrified by what's happening. It's just and they've got a different call, and so, the sounds at night are different. You're losing your insects. I mean, naturalists are just filled with grief. There's an enormous amount of grieving, and I think urban people will be find it very disconcerting that these things are really, really aggressive. They're right on the front foot. They probably fit in well in New York. They go right into your house. They go all over your veranda. They're just really in your face. You know what I mean?
Has anybody tried eating them? Frog's legs are a delicacy in some parts of the world.
There's a few people have looked at actually how you can utilize the cane toads, and not much has happened on that front in Australia yet, but it could well be that something along those lines could end up happening. One thing that is interesting is that, not specifically cane toads, but the bufo toads actually play a role in traditional Chinese medicine, and particularly relating to the bufo toxin itself. And there's research going on looking at possible medicinal uses for the bufo toxin.
So the poison could actually have some good medicinal impact, as well as the terrible one it's had so far.
There is some evidence that suggests from traditional Chinese medicine that it could actually be quite useful in the treatment of heart disease, but that's in extremely early days.
I want to thank you so much for talking with us, and let's hope that this doesn't make Darwin a really difficult place to live, because David Bowman, my heart goes out to you. David Bowman is the director of the Key Center for Tropical Wildlife Management in Darwin, Australia. He's been talking with us, along with Keith Salfeld, Wildlife Management Officer with Parks and Wildlife in Australia. Thank you both for participating in today's Underreported.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.